This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Election results are still trickling in, but at this point in the day, we can say that Joe Biden holds a slim lead over Donald Trump in Michigan for the presidential contest. And results down the ballot are really a mixed bag. If you were hoping for a decisive voter mandate in 2020, I hope you have a very sophisticated way of reading the tea leaves. With us now to talk more about election results is John Selleck, a longtime Republican and founder of Harbor Strategic Public Affairs, and Adrian Hemond, longtime Democrat and founder of the public affairs agency Grassroots Midwest. John, Adrian, hey, how you doing?
Doing great.
I'm great. Thanks for having us on the live show. This is exciting.
Woo, what a night. Guys, what do you make of Joe Biden's razor-thin lead in Michigan right now? Adrian, can you start us out?
Sure. I think it's likely to expand a little bit, not a lot. Most of the votes that are left to be counted are from very Democrat heavy areas where you can expect the margins to run pretty strongly in favor of Joe Biden and other Democratic candidates. So I think if anything, his margins likely to increase a little bit as we get the remainder of the votes counted.
John, we don't want to go too far when there's still tabulation going on, but do you expect this lead to hold up?
Really, I'm out of the prediction business, and I think most of them probably should be too. What we do know, though, is like you said, is we're a 50-50 nation. We're back to that, or we've been that way, and we just didn't realize it this whole time. And, you know, the winners end up being Republicans, really, especially at the state house level and some congressional seats, and the losers, obviously, are good friends, but with the big egos, the pollsters. They and some of the media have lost some credibility because of what happened.
We'll see. We'll have to get into that a little further. I mean, it seems to me, did very few people actually change their minds either way in 2020? I was looking up some poll results from earlier in this year, and it looks like a pandemic, an economic crash, a massive social upheaval didn't move presidential poll numbers a whole lot.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, what changed, people did make some different decisions this time. They decided to vote. If you look at turnout around Michigan, whether these are Republican heavy areas or Democratic heavy areas, that was the difference. People decided to vote. But in terms of the vote preferences that you got from the various counties in Michigan, no, those look pretty much the same, just a lot more people voted.
Yeah, I'd agree with Adrian on that front. If you look through so many of the counties, the percentages in which they changed between the Republican Democrats really are fairly small. I mean, Biden did really increase the lead for Democrats in Oakland, but Trump really increased the turnout in the areas where he was, like in Bay, went from plus 12 to plus 17. So there's some minor reshuffling in places, continuing that kind of realignment of where the counties go, blue or red. But we've got a lot more to learn from this data. It's going to take a while.
John, I wanted to talk to you about the counties that we see voting for Donald Trump in 2016 and which we see going for Biden in 2020. I have to stress, these are unofficial results. And I don't know if they're more consequential than what's coming out of Metro Detroit right now. But we've got Leelanau County, Muskegon, and Saginaw counties flipping in 2020. Do these places have anything in common?
Yeah, they do in a general sense that they either have a heavy blue collar or rural flavor to them. If you look through the northern counties from Clare, basically up into the UP, you'll see that President Trump carried on pretty much with the same large margins that he had in those areas. But if you look back over his schedule over the last month when he essentially lived in Michigan, he really centered in on the blue collar counties. And that's why you saw, like I said, that margin in Bay County go up by 5 points. You saw that by a very slim margin in an unofficial way that he seems to have flipped Muskegon, and that was one of his stops most recently.
Zach Stanton is the digital editor for Politico and a Macomb County native, by the way. And I saw him noting last night or today that Democrats have a fair shot at winning the presidency. They're likely to retain control of the U.S. House of Representatives. And yet, as he put it, many are feeling as if they lost in a bigger existential way. Adrian Hemond, do you think that's true? Do you think Democrats lose a larger point this year, even if Joe Biden wins?
No, I don't think so at all. I think John had it exactly right. There are plenty of wins here for Republicans, particularly down ballot in Michigan. Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about the state House of Representatives, you know, and keeping control of that, there are plenty of wins for Democrats too. Democrats flip control of the state Supreme Court. I don't see people talking about that a lot yet, but I'm sure that they will be. You know, and Democrats obviously appear to have flipped Michigan in terms of the presidential vote, and we've got a razor thin U.S. Senate race yet to be decided. That's going to be another win for either the Democrats or the Republicans. The polling industry is the big loser from last night.
John, indeed, we know that there are millions of Americans that are satisfied and pleased with President Trump and his leadership style. They perhaps agree with the president that the economy should not be shut down in spite of the pandemic right now. What do we make of the fact that maybe half of registered voters aren't really convinced on how the other half has been living in 2020?
Well, like I said, I think we've remained a 50-50 nation, and this does have a lot of echoes taking us back to the year 2000 and the Bush-Gore fight there. Now, that did pass over time. When I think of George W. Bush, I don't think of the recount, and I really try not to think about Al Gore as much as I can, but we are going to have to figure out how to talk to our neighbors again. But one interesting thing on that front, and I'm just fascinated, we may more so need to get into the psychological view of this and looking at exit polling to the extent you can trust it. One version of that up on CNN last night asked, what were the most important traits to voters in their president? Mm-hmm. And all the usual stuff was up there. But the number one thing was strong leadership. And you can disagree with President Trump a whole lot, and you can not like the way he speaks and deals with certain people, but he certainly has that image, and that's something I did. Whereas I think the Democrats may question a little bit the Biden strategy. He essentially is going to potentially win twice for being someone else. He wasn't Bernie Sanders when he won the primary, and maybe he wasn't Donald Trump when he won the presidency, but that didn't provide a whole lot of momentum in his campaign. They kind of were running like a run out the clock offense from the presidential level, and that did not help drive a blue wave that everybody wanted to see.
I mean, that may have been the perception that Republican voters have of President Trump, but I was seeing polling the week before the election that most Americans believed that Trump had not handled, you know, their number one issue was the pandemic, and they believed that he had not handled it well. How do you square that with the perception of him as a strong leader?
The short thing I can say is just from my own observation is there, it's a much more finely attuned question than you see on the surface. There are a lot of people who appreciate, that may not be the right word, but they see in President Trump, he's willing to break China and make noise. I don't mean the country. and to make things happen or to stir things up. And most of America is just pretty unhappy. They don't want somebody who is going to go and maybe necessarily play nice. I think that was a factor actually in the Senate race where, to put it briefly, is that John James and his advertising campaign was able to come across as more of an aggressive leader. Here's what I'm going to do going forward, standing up for you. The Peters campaign ran an issue-based laundry list of here's what I did for you. Here's what I'm trying to prove to you that I did things for you. And that didn't sell a lot more tickets for him. He ran behind Joe Biden pretty much everywhere, including the AVs.
If you're just joining us, we're talking. Adrian, hang on 1 second. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with John Selleck of Harbor Strategic Public Affairs and Adrian Hemond of the Public Affairs Agency Grassroots Midwest. Adrian, about that Senate race, what were you going to say?
Well, I was actually going to back up from the Senate race for a second. I do disagree with John on 2 points there. Number one, I think the Biden campaign ran the right strategy because they're, you know, based on the miss nationally and in a lot of the state polling, there wasn't actually a blue wave to be had. And I don't think that wasn't there to be had with the levels of motivation that were there on both sides. The other thing I would point back to is, you know, the other thing we're seeing in the popular vote is that it's not actually a 50-50 country. And John pointed to the problem here, right, is that we're not actually neighbors. Joe Biden looks like he's going to get a few million more votes than Donald Trump. A decent sized majority of the popular vote. But those folks don't necessarily live by each other, those Trump voters and those Biden voters. We saw that play out in Michigan, right? Where in terms of the state legislature, there are going to be two Democrats north of Flint. Mm. Two. We don't live by each other as much. And that's part of what is driving the division. John's right. We need to learn to talk to our neighbors. But we also need to be neighbors with people who don't think exactly like us for that to work.
Let's just take a quick touch back on those Senate numbers, though. At this point, it looks like 98% of the vote is in for this contest between incumbent Gary Peters and John James, the Republican who's challenging him. And I mean, this is looking like a four-digit difference. And now, again, it's things can change. The race has not been called yet. But this is tough for an incumbent. Adrian, what didn't happen for Gary Peters that he wasn't able to capitalize on this election more?
You know, Michigan's pretty closely divided, as reflected in the presidential results. Senator Peters, unfortunately for him, had to run against what I think objectively is a more attractive candidate in most senses of the word than the president. And that's reflected in the results as we've seen them to date, that John James is running ahead of the president. I think the other thing is that, Gary Peters is sort of the inverse of the old expression, all sizzle, no steak. Gary's all steak and not much sizzle, right? He's not an exciting, inspiring politician. He's kind of a workhorse. And if you follow what goes on in Washington, D.C., maybe that's appealing to you. But he didn't make the emotional connection with voters, even that Joe Biden did, right? If you weren't a supporter of President Trump, Joe Biden was able to connect with you. And Gary struggled with that because he's not, he's never run for office as Mr. Personality. He's run for office as being competent. And I think people are looking for, at least based on the election results in Michigan and around the country, people want a little bit more appeal to emotion, a little bit more sizzle.
Are we looking at a situation where Democrats possibly get the presidency with Joe Biden, but maybe lose the Senate seat in Michigan to John James?
Absolutely. I think that's happening across the country, to be honest. I mean, the media had essentially written off a Republican Senate majority a long time ago based on a lot of that public polling that ended up being so incredibly wrong. And the problem is, I think if you start at the top, Biden ran a generally risk adverse campaign, trying to not be Donald Trump and try to run the clock out. And Peters ran an even more reserved, more risk adverse campaign than that. I mean, he managed to run behind Joe Biden. The unofficial results, he was down 2 in Oakland to Biden, down 4 in Kent to Biden, down 3 in Kalamazoo, down 2 even in Washtenaw to Joe Biden. So he was not inspiring and pushing that. And what that's also telling us is we're entering more than ever. It seems funny to say that TV is important to campaigns. It's been for a long time, but the ability of a candidate to appear and deliver a personality and inspire on television is become more important than ever. And that's just an advantage that James had, and it really kept the Peters campaign from getting any of their attacks to really stick to him.
Mm. We should mention also, there's been something going on in Antrim County, an error that appears to be some sort of mechanical error in its reporting of results. We are hearing that it might result in 6,000 more votes for John James, although Gary Peters appears to be leading at the moment. Adrian, do you see this as being a turning point for the race?
I'll be quite honest. I don't think people who opine do this enough. I don't have any idea. And I don't think anyone who's being honest has any idea either.
We're recording this, right? We got Adrian recorded.
But I think that's the only possible answer. I mean, I thought I was being smart and edgy 3 months ago when I said that this race was going to come down to fewer than 50,000 votes. And apparently I wasn't edgy enough. So I really couldn't say.
Go ahead, John.
Real briefly, it's just so unfortunate because for all the suspicion that resides on both sides of the R&D divide, all the suspicion of government and institutions and everything that already exists, and then for something like that to happen, and on its surface right now, it looks like it legitimately happened. It's not a rumor. It's really disappointing because it just keeps pulling down the credibility, and it makes false claims that come later potentially more believable.
Let's talk a little bit about the Michigan House. It appears at this point that Republicans will maintain control of that portion of the state legislature. John Selleck, do you think we can chalk this up to Trump turnout?
It definitely helped. One of the smartest moves that the House GOP made was to sort of sneak attack into seats that Trump had won. And it kind of goes against conventional wisdom inside Lansing because of these term limits. You have 3 terms, and usually people will generally think I can only knock off an incumbent on their first try for re-election. By the time they get to their third term, we probably need to let it go and then just come at it when it's an open seat. But that's not what the House GOP and Speaker Lee Chatfield did in the 96th district in Bay County. They saw that Trump won it last time. He ended up winning it by 5 points more this time, and they ran a solid candidate in that seat. Actually, 2 guys running against each other. That's almost a rarity now. And they picked it up, and that's what they needed to do. They tried that in a few other seats as well. It didn't necessarily work out everywhere, but it worked in Genesee County, in the out county of the Flint area also, in a seat that Trump won. So those were smart moves on their part, and it ended up countering the 2 seats they lost.
Adrian Hemond, any particular seats surprising to you in the results at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big surprise, partly driven by the polling miss, is that the Democrats weren't as competitive statewide in these House seats as they thought they were going to be, as a lot of folks thought that they would be. There was a perception out there that, fueled by the polling, that Democrats were going to run the table in Oakland County, both in the 3 sort of targeted seats, 38, 39, and 45, and that they might even be able to pick up some stretch goal seats. And if you thought that Joe Biden was going to win Michigan by 8 points, that was a perfectly reasonable assumption. With these tighter margins, some of those seats that are trending the Dems' way ended up being a little too tough to get over the top. House District 39 is a great example of that. If Joe Biden actually wins Michigan by 8 points, the Democrats probably take that seat. They almost certainly take it. They came up short in the 39th against an incumbent because, beating an incumbent with narrow margins like this was going to be tough.
Yeah.
Let me throw in there real quick. I talked with you about this, but I talked to a million people about it, that everybody wanted to identify the new bellwether or the new swing area. And so we spent a lot of time talking about Kent County and Grand Rapids, that area being the new swing area. And frankly, from, Mandy Bolter on the county commission up to Peter Meyer on the congressional race and the state house races that everybody in Lansing was starting to think might go the other way, they all went Republican.
Not so swingy. County, yeah.
Yeah, right. It's not what everybody thought.
Yeah. So it's easy to forget with all the election furor, but this has not been a bellwether year for harmonious governance in Lansing. How do these results change the math, if at all, for state governance, Adrian?
I think it probably doesn't make too much of a difference. I mean, you're going to add a new set of personalities into the legislative leadership in the House, which may help shape things up a bit and improve relations. But ultimately the House is pretty closely divided. There's a little bit more of a margin in that GOP Senate. And I don't think the fundamental dynamic between the GOP legislature and the governor changes, other than the governor's next, right? 2022 is her reelection. And so she probably is going to be motivated to get some wins out of the GOP legislature. But I don't think the fundamental dynamic changes much at all.
Guys, we got to leave it there. John Selleck of Harbor Strategies, I owe you a beer. Adrian Hemond of Grassroots Midwest, thank you both for joining us. That is our post-election edition of Stateside. We'll have more results for you throughout the week. I'm April Baer. Thanks so much for listening.